This is Growing the Valley, a podcast by the University of California, Agriculture and Natural Resources. I'm one of your hosts, Luke Melliron, Farm Advisor for Butte, Tehama, and Glenn Counties.
I'm your other host, Phoebe Gordon, Orchard Farm Advisor for Madera and Merced Counties.
Phoebe, you have a lot of expertise in soil and water. What's the 30,000, foot view of how water moves through, any plant soil type, type system?
Water is in a continuum from the soils through the plants into the atmosphere. And so in general, water is moving from the soils to the atmosphere, usually through plants, and we're talking about an ag basis, but you can go directly from the soil to the atmosphere as well. And that's because in general, there's very little water in the atmosphere. There's a lot more water in plants and soils. And so there are points when that continuum is disrupted, like let's say there's not enough water in the soil for plants to pull out, or let's say that plants are really stressed, or maybe they've evolved mechanisms to kind of reduce the amount of water that's lost. But in general, when we're talking about ag plants, they tend to not be that great at holding onto water. And so when we're thinking about it, it's just this continual loss of water from the soil into the atmosphere via plants.
So what we have here is a process that generates this pull of water, this tug from the soil into the roots, through the vascular system of the plants and out to the very dry atmosphere, to the air. Why, as ag producers, do we care or need to think and carefully consider this concept?
Growers and, crop advisors and irrigators are going to care because, plants need water to survive. Every living organism does. And we live in a climate where we don't have enough, there's not enough rain that falls from the sky, so we have to irrigate. And so what we have to do is we have to understand how water works in these systems in order to irrigate efficiently. And the best tool that we currently have that's available to everyone, and we're going to have an episode on this, is the pressure chamber, or nicknamed the pressure bomb. And that uses some fundamental concepts of plant physiology and water movement, the fancy term for it is water potential, in order to irrigate efficiently. And so there are some other types of monitoring tools out there, like soil tensiometers or gypsum blocks. I think they're ceramic blocks now. I always want to call them gypsum blocks. But anyways, those are good, but they're not perfect because they only tell you what's going on in the soil. And because they're out of sight, it can be easy to not confirm that they're working properly. I think a tensiometer is a little bit easier than a gypsum block. But taking water potential is something that gets you in the orchard constantly.
So Phoebe, we care about this continuum of water movement, mm-hmm. because in California we're in a situation where there's a certain amount in the bank, that we have in our soils, and there's a tremendous draw on that during the summer, and we need to replace it with the irrigation. We care about this concept of water potential because we can actually measure part of this continuum of water movement through our orchard systems. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about this, this kind of abstract sounding concept of water potential.
So water potential, there's a lot of very core physical properties that describe how water potential is generated. And there are a lot of concepts that are similar between soils and plants, but there are some that are different. But basically, it's just a way to quantify whether or not water wants to move from one system, so soils into plants, or plants into atmospheres into another. And so we measure water potential through tension, which is the opposite of pressure. If you talk about bars, positive bars are pressure, so that's what you're going to be gauging how full your car tires are. And negative bars are tension. And so that's what we think about when we're looking or thinking about water in plants or soils or the atmosphere. So in general, the more negative water potential is, the stronger draw that system or that is going to have. So we're also able to use it to monitor stress in plants because we know that when the water potential in plants becomes more negative, they're more stressed. And so there are different degrees of stress that plant species can have. In general, almonds are a lot more water stress tolerant than walnuts. And we're still not quite sure what pistachios are, but we kind of think that it's around the same levels as almonds. But it's basically just a useful tool for us to quantify water movement in different systems when there are different things that generate water potential. So what we care about in these systems are how much water is actually in a system. So in general, soils with a lot of water are going to have a less negative, so there's more water available for uptake, water potential than soils that are dried out. Soils that have a lot of salt in solution, it's harder for the plants to take the water out, so that has a more negative water potential than soils that don't have a lot of salts.
We know that soils are very different. There's some soils you can drive on after a rain or an irrigation almost right away, versus we have soils in the Sac Valley that just remain saturated for long periods. How does the concept of soil texture and pore size come into this part of the continuum?
We've planned a soil series to talk about a lot of the more concepts of soil science more in depth, but basically, soils are composed of solids, which is the particles, and voids, which is what either stores air or water, both of which are very important to plant health. And so the size of those voids or of the pores are dependent on soil texture as well as soil structure. So things that affect soil texture, you know, or I guess I'd say affect it because it's just a measured property of soils, but you know, it's sand, silt, or clay. So in general, the larger the particle, the larger the pore. Structure is also very important because well-structured and well-aggregated soils tend to have a better distribution of pore sizes. And so in general, the larger the pore, the looser that water is going to be held. So sandy soils, everyone knows, you can dump a bunch of water on it and they're going to dry out really quickly, but water moves through really quickly. Clay soils have a lot smaller pores, and so what happens is that the water is held on more tightly. There's more water in those soils, but the plants can't access them because the pores are too small. A lot of them are, at least. And so that's why we like loam so much, because they have a good mix between those larger soil particles and those smaller soil particles, and they kind of tend to have, you know, a more intermediate level of water availability for the plant. And so that's also a component of water potential, is how strongly this water will hold on to those, will stay in those soil pores.
So we've already talked about a couple direct measurements of this soil plant atmosphere continuum, this movement of water from the soil into the roots, up through the vascular system, out through the pores, the stomata in the leaves. We've talked about the measurement at the leaf level through stem water potential with a pressure chamber, pressure bomb. And we've talked about it with the tension in the soil with a tensiometer type a device that's measuring the tension at that part of the system. But there's another way we can think about the soil level of the system and couple that with the evapotranspiration, the water loss estimates that we get and that we'll have an episode on.
We were just at a conference when, basically the irrigation question is still under discussion by researchers, and it probably will until the end of time. But basically, one way you can think about it is water in, water out. So water out is evapotranspiration, or ET, so that's that process of water loss. And so water in is either through precipitation, which in the Sacramento Valley, that's a really good source of input. But if you're talking about Kern County, not so much unless we have a really wet year. And so then you're going to need to add water into the soil. And so One thing that's really helpful to know when you're thinking about that is how much water your soil can hold. You know, if you have a sandy soil, they can't hold as much water, and the water is depleted more quickly than in a loamy soil. And so you're not going to want to irrigate a sandy soil like you would a loamy or a clay loam soil. You're going to be irrigating, you know, you could choose to irrigate a clay loam soil more infrequently, but have longer irrigation sessions because it can hold more water. So what you can do is, if you know how your soil texture changes by depth, and so this is going to be either through your USDA soil survey or by you just going out or paying someone to go out into your orchard and start digging and getting textures. And so you're going to be wanting to do it by foot-by-foot basis. And so what you can do is say, okay, so I know that my texture is, you know, pretty loamy at the top. You know, maybe I have a sandy layer, or maybe it starts to, the clay content starts to increase as it goes down. And, you know, maybe I have an impenetrable layer 4 feet down. And so I have a very limited root system. Well, I'm not going to want to be irrigating to try to, you know, fill up the soil profile 5 feet down. So what I'm going to start doing is saying, okay, so let's say the top foot can hold an inch of water per foot depth. The next one can hold, you know, maybe, and I'm just coming up with these numbers, 3/4 of an inch. And you start adding that up by the rooting depth. And so you say, okay, this is how much my soil profile can hold. And in the beginning of the season, when I'm trying to assess how much rain the soil can hold, I will know how much is available when the trees start transpiring. And then I can decide what depth I want to irrigate to and how much water to start adding. And so we don't wait to start irrigating until the trees have depleted all of the water in the root system, because then they're going to go through stress and they're not going to grow as efficiently. We're going to lose yield. And so what you need to know is what the allowable depletion is of your soil, so how much water they can lose before starting to become really stressed. And then we typically choose 50% of that is when you start irrigating. And so then what you're going to need to do is you're going to need to do it on a case by case or block by block basis. So there are some soils that go really deep, you know, and you might find roots that extend all the way down to the water table. And, you know, this is why we like the pressure chamber, because you can measure whether or not the trees are taking that water up, which it's very hard to do with a soil probe to take it down that deep. Or you might have a really shallow impenetrable barrier. And so what you're going to be doing is just like giving these trees constant shots of water to keep them alive. And so this is going to allow you to kind of fine tune how long you're going to irrigate and how often you're going to irrigate, because you're going to be wanting to constantly replenish soil water levels based on the rooting depth. And something that's also important to keep in mind, that you don't necessarily have to try to irrigate to the entire rooting depth throughout the year, especially as water infiltration tends to slow down as the season progresses because of all the irrigation the trees have been getting. It can become no longer feasible to irrigate to that depth. And so maybe you think about the entire rooting depth in the beginning of the season, but later in the season, you know, you just try to make sure that that top 2, maybe 3 feet of soil is being constantly wetted.
So today we talked about the value of thinking about this soil plant atmosphere continuum, the draw of water through our agricultural system. We can use this concept and make it applicable in our irrigation management by measuring the system either at the soil level with soil tension, at the leaf level with the pressure chamber, and we can also use this soil moisture budget type approach and look at our soil textures and how much of allowable depletion available with the different soil textures at the different depths of any given field. Of course, that approach requires a lot of assumptions, and sometimes the ground truthing with soil moisture by feel or with tensiometers, or especially with the pressure chamber, can help fact check our assumptions with any kind of budget approach. Do you have anything more to add, Phoebe?
We're going to be talking a lot about some of these ground truthing technologies later, and I just really want to emphasize how important it is to not only rely on ET, especially, you know, if you have young trees. you know, I've gone on a farm call with a grower who was very conscientious about following their irrigation schedule to make sure that they, you know, replaced ET. So part of the issue was is that they were following a historical ET chart. So they weren't taking current conditions into account. And also, they had a really vigorous orchard that was growing a lot. So what ended up happening was that their trees were water stressed. Took my pressure chamber out there and we took some measures and, you know, that's what we found. But we wouldn't have known that unless I had gone out there and measured that. And so irrigation is hard. It's really hard. And it's very easy for us to sit here in this podcast and tell everyone what to do. We absolutely recognize that. And like, there are very heated arguments that go in on the research side as well about what is going on with irrigation and even what water potential actually is. But it's important to remember that there are tools out there that you can use to measure, and you just can't rely on one. And, you know, everyone makes mistakes, right? So you just got to learn and move on to the next one.
Absolutely. Making sure that you capture as many different sources of information as possible when you're making irrigation decisions, and then continually fact-checking your assumptions about how you think your system is working, and just investing in your own knowledge and information, because at the end of the day, it's your decision to turn on the pump and turn off the pump. Mm-hmm. And it's the irrigation manager's ability to make those judgment calls as a refined tool. It's not easy, but the more you learn, the better you are at it. It's probably one of the greatest skills in California farming.
Thanks for listening to Growing the Valley, a UCANR podcast. You can find out more about this episode at our website, growingthevalleypodcast.com.
We would like to thank the Almond Board of California and the California Pistachio Research Board for providing funding. We would also like to thank my sister, Muriel Gordon, for writing and recording our theme music.